Hello again, everybody, and welcome to another episode of BitNote. This is David Collins, and we've got a nice selection of video game music for you, so hang tight, have a listen, and hope you enjoy. Okay, so to start things off, I've got a track from a game that kind of was released recently and has got a bit of humor to it, but hasn't received as much attention as maybe I'd like. The game is called Roundabout, and in this game you've got the task of playing as Giorgio Manos, and you've got the world's first revolving limousine. So you are basically giving taxi rides to people in a limousine that constantly rotates around its center point. Now, if you might think that, you know, wait a sec, isn't a revolving limousine not only dangerous and, you know, potentially pointless, then obviously you're not familiar with the tone of this game, which kind of goes along with it. So essentially, you've got this whole world of roundabout, and you try to navigate it in your revolving limousine. It revolves, and essentially you've got to make damn sure that you don't crash into anything, because if you do, you get damaged, and if you do it more, the whole thing blows up. Somehow you and your passenger remain okay, but it's still not recommended. I'm going to play the main theme for the game. It's called Disco Incinerator. It was originally composed by Mark Clark and licensed for this game, Roundabout, which was developed by No Goblin LLC. So no goblins. So, without further ado, here's the main theme. Have a listen and hope you enjoy. So, that was a pretty good track, I think. As I said, it was called Disco Incinerator by Mark Clark, as used in Roundabout by No Goblin LLC. Roundabout has got an interesting personality to it. Essentially, as I'm saying, the limousine is long, thin, and it kind of constantly rotates at its center point in a way that doesn't quite make a lot of sense. It's kind of inspired a little by a game called Kuro Kuro Kurin, which was a Game Boy Advance launch title. And the idea in that game is you had a long, thin rectangle that would keep rotating about its point. You'd have a top-down, you know, it was all 2D. And because it's rotating, you got to actually move it through all this tricky terrain. And it's very... And, of course, if there was a narrow gap, you had to move the rectangle through when it was, like, even before it rotated and became flat and hit the sides. So, essentially, you had to move it very, very quickly across this landscape and constantly think about where it'd be rotating to in order to get the right patterns. It's a very challenging game. Well, the people at No Goblin decided to take this fun little Game Boy launch title and turn it into a full-fledged video game storyline about the world's first revolving limousine. And boy, it is weird. But they also didn't just take inspiration from that era, they also took inspiration from the mid-90s FMV games, because they actually have live-action film-recorded things with actors and such to actually, do the story. So essentially, you start off with like a video explaining what's going on, and then you go through the mission. At the mission, you get an end video of this person who got into your thing, and then you go around the town, find another mission, when you start that, another video. And the videos are all people getting into your taxi limousine and saying where they want to go, and there's all these whimsical characters, including one person who seriously has some political views that imply that she needs to take guerrilla action in that regard, and you've got a priest, and you've got a weird guy who pretends to be tourists from completely different countries, and all these sort of like weird crazy characters who have various reasons for going to the different destination, and your job is to get to the destination safely as the taxi constantly spins. And as I said, you're playing as Georgi Amanos, and essentially, the whole thing is meant to look like kind of like a 1977 B-movie. Although you can see that the people making this didn't exactly have the most amount of film experience, so it kind of looks like a cheesy, modern-day amateur take on a 90s genre of a 1970s cheesy genre. So it's just ridiculous at some points. Oh, and there's also a skeleton that pops up, but that's totally a different thing altogether. One thing I actually found funny when I was researching the game is that some of the actors who play roles in this movie are actually people I kind of already had familiarity with. This game was developed in Seattle and apparently involved a couple of actual real game developers and such. For instance, the guy who at one stage pretends to be a Canadian tourist, another time a Swedish tourist, is played by Danny Baranski, who I played music from the game before. He's made a lot of great tracks for various different games and on his own, and often with a chiptune feel, and I liked his music, and apparently he gets a cameo in this game. And someone I wasn't expecting a cameo from was Richard Rouse III. He's been a game designer on games such as The Suffering, and I remember him quite because I read a book he did on game design once, which I found very involving, where he talked to a lot of different game designers and explored a lot of different aspects about how game design worked. It was just very fascinating. So, there you have it. Roundabout, which has a bunch of crazy characters in a revolving limousine, a bright art style, and many, many limousine explosions happen with a lot of weird, fun little features. Okay, so I'm going to move on to our next thing. We go from a bright, colourful game, well, colourful despite the fact that, you know, apparently it's kind of very easy to run over people in the game, but that's something else. Let's not worry about that right now. And we move on to a game from a few years ago called Stalker Shadow of Chernobyl. Here's the main menu theme. Have a listen and hope you enjoy.
Thank you.
And that was the main theme of Stalker Shadow of Chernobyl. Boy. Now, I believe that music was made by Muse, which is aka Freyr Vladimir, who is a famous Russian electronic music artist. He made a lot of the music for this game. I'm not 100% sure, though, because I actually... The soundtrack to this game is available on the website, and apparently it doesn't include this specific song. So, it should be by Muse, but there's always a chance it wasn't. So, sorry if Muse, if it isn't, or whoever actually made it. But as you can see, it's very atmospheric and is from the game Stalker Shadow of Chernobyl. Now, Stalker was released several years ago, I believe around 2006, and it got a lot of attention for that time because it had a very strong atmosphere. It's set in basically the near future, or I suppose that would be around about the present day these days, where essentially the Chernobyl exclusion zone, i.e. the area around Chernobyl where, you know, people aren't allowed to go because of the radiation, or at least mostly aren't, has suddenly started to expand and weird stuff has happened. It's like reality is like being ripped up. They're strange mutant creatures, and basically people are afraid because this whole zone around Chernobyl is kind of growing, and like weird stuff has been happening in Chernobyl. It's not just going on, and so it's created this kind of like weird, almost slightly skewed version of reality there, where stalkers, which are people, where people go there to try to like make their fortune and find rare and valuable artifacts, but also deal with savage mutants and attacks and strange phenomenons. And one of the game's signature things, which are singularities, which are weird anomalies that basically sometimes they just irradiate you, sometimes they just shoot flames at you out of nowhere, sometimes they suddenly suck you into them and then blast out, tearing you to shreds all over the place. Yes, this is a rather bleak and unforgiving landscape. The whole idea is that you start the game having been rescued from a van with amnesia. Yes, highly original way to start a game, I guess. And all you know that your mission is, and from one PDA, is that you have to kill this person. You've got a photo, you've got a name, and you have to kill him. Now this, to be honest, wasn't a very motivating way for me to actually begin the game, because since I'm saying, why do I have to kill someone that I don't even know? But that's meant to be your motivation, and I think I'll say, having played further into the game, that the mystery over who this person is and why I have to kill him, it does pay off. So don't worry, it's not just some stupid revenge thing or anything like that. There's a good reason of what's going on, and when you find out, it is certainly interesting. So essentially you go around it, and it's a bleak landscape. You sometimes get minor tasks almost from an MMORPG, like shoot this guy or hit this guy, but mainly what you're doing is following the main quest of determining who this guy is and what's going on. And as you do it, you pick up more lore and interesting stuff. For instance, of course, the main Chernobyl plant. Apparently there's this thing in Eric that can grant wishes, and that's got your interest. Maybe you could just go there and wish for, make some great wish, and everything will come true. But is that everything? And as you go around, you're just trying to gradually uncover it, but also deal with a bleak landscape. You get ambushed, people attack you sometimes for a reason, sometimes not. Sometimes there's military people there, and sometimes they attack you, and sometimes they don't. I managed to get through a military outpost at one stage in the game, but later on they seemed to open fire on sight. Now, it may have been because I was involved in fighting a whole bunch of military earlier on in the game, but yeah, you never know these things. And essentially, you've also are able to grab a few anomalies, and you're able to stock them, take them, and give yourself extra strength or extra abilities for small things. But it's still a bleak game. You can still very easily get overpowered. You've got a limited set of weapons, some of which jam, which are very irritating, and other which can just break down after disuse. So you've just got to constantly scrabble to really get whatever things you need to do in order to get through the next stage in the game. And trust me, along with all your other equipment, one very useful thing will be the autosave key. Yes, that certainly gets used a heck of a lot in this game. To wrap up, one of the significant things about Stalker in retrospect is that it really did kind of push the post-apocalyptic genre, actually, which is fine, interesting, because even though everything looks so desolate and abandoned cars and very various locations kind of based on the real Chernobyl and everything, but the weird thing is this game technically does not take place in a post-apocalyptic world. It takes place in just a part of the world around about modern day that's just very, very became very different from the rest of the world. And while the game did have a lot of atmosphere and grit, replaying it didn't hit me quite as hard the first time because, I mean, with games such as Fallout and Metro, of course, which was made by the guys who made by some of the guys who worked on this game, of course. It's shown that the whole, like, post-apocalyptic, desolate world, abandoned trucks, abandoned villages, you know, gloomy skies, has actually been done quite a bit, so maybe it just doesn't have quite the same punch that it did the first time around. But regardless, it was a good game, tough and sometimes brutal, but it's got its qualities. Now, aside from Moose, who did a lot of the ambient soundtrack for this game, there was also Firelake, and Firelake is a Ukrainian band who basically made three songs for this game, including, I think, one that wasn't in there. What I'm about to play you is Firelake's band called Dirge for the Planet. The fun thing about this track is that you do actually hear glimpses of it caught on radios about the place. I've talked on the show before about radios in video games that play snatches of songs, and just like other radios in games, there were times I was trying to, like, you know, stand near the radio and listen to the song in its entirety, or maybe I'd just keep coming in and out of an area and hear snatches of this song as I was trying to either restock on up on ammo or leave an area in order to take on a mission. But regardless, I think it's a very haunting and emotional song, and I'd like to play it. This is Dirge for the Planet by Firelake from Stalker's Shadow of Chernobyl, which was developed by GSC Game World. Have a listen and hope you enjoy.
Miracles.
And that was Dirge for the Planet from the video game Stalker Shadow of Chernobyl. It was composed by Firelake, and the game was made by GSC Game World. Okay, so enough of destroying cities, and then let's get back to building them back up again. The game I'm going to talk about now is Cities Skylines, a game that was released only a few years ago, kind of developed by Colossal Order, one of the lesser known game development studios, but this game really helped push them forward. City building has had a long and illustrious history in game development, although it hasn't been quite as big as late. One of the earliest ones was SimCity, of course, which at the time people thought, no, people wouldn't want a video game that doesn't have really goals where you just build a city. That's silly. But SimCity became a huge hit, and the origin of SimCity is discussed in that game design book by Richard Rouse III that I talked about just a moment ago. But aside from that, SimCity became kind of an established thing in the gaming communities, because it was a game where you could build cities, build them up, and then unleash a gigantic series of horrible disasters on them, like hurricanes, tornadoes, and sometimes even alien attacks. So I guess in video games, the urge to destroy can be as strong as ever. The series went for quite a long time. It had like SimCity 2000, SimCity 3000. It took a while before it went SimCity 4. And in the meantime, it launched a kind of a similar one called The Sims, which is also a major and roaring success in its own right. But then it seemed that like the city building was kind of falling out of favor. And while a few indie ones came up, or smaller game studios came up with stuff like, you know, Cities XXL and stuff, the studio that made Cities Skylines, which was Maxis, which was then bought out by EA, seemed less interested in catering towards this area. But then, just a few years recently, they came out that they announced they were releasing a new game called SimCity, which was doing that annoying thing of releasing a game that was named after the first iteration in the series. Not SimCity 5, just SimCity. And after getting over the annoyance in the naming schemes, the game was released and turned out it wasn't that good. Oh, it had good graphics, and some people liked some of the disasters and the effects that went into the game, but it didn't really simulate the city that well, and also the area that you could build a city in was incredibly small. What's more is it was required to be connected to the internet the whole time, and it was basically forced you to play in some weird multiplayer mode where essentially the idea was everyone created cities on their own plots of land and they hooked up to each other in a great big world. That sounds like a great idea, of course, but for a start, people weren't able to opt out of the idea. People were restricted to very small plots of land, and they couldn't really connect, and you know, if the internet went down for whatever reason, sometimes the whole game could crash. There was a fantastic PR disaster over, you know, EA representatives claiming one thing about the game and then having it denied. It was, of course, an effort to stop piracy, but of course, cracked versions of the game could be coded to stop this from happening. So they claimed that, yeah, we need to be connected to the internet to make some computations on the cloud to return. And then people said, well, what about this thing where you can play the game for like 17 minutes without an internet connection, all this sort of stuff. So it was a whole mess all around. And then later Cities Skylines got released by Colossal Order, a completely different thing, and people then played and said, this is good, this is what SimCity should have been, a great city builder. It didn't quite have the disasters, but everything else was so complex. It had fully simulated traffic, which I liked, which meant that if you didn't design your roads of your city that well, it could all get backed up. So you'd still like to do residential and industrial and commercial districts, but you also got to make sure that there's good transport, so maybe trains, and then you can also put in bus routes and subways. But it gets more complicated than that. You've also got to have an entire garbage disposal system. So do you want to use a landfill or do you want to use an incinerator? Incinerator causes a lot of pollution, but a landfill, you know, everything goes in, but then it's almost impossible to get rid of a landfill after you've built it up. You know, after playing, I remember there was so much like controversy here in Dublin about an incinerator being built on the Dublin Docklands and stuff. And to be honest, in playing this game, I finally actually got a bit of sympathy for the people who are trying to build an incinerator in the first place. Because seriously, landfills are a pain to maintain. They take up space. You have to do a huge amount of work if you end up wanting to, like, you know, build anything on top of them. And it seems no matter how many you build, you'll always want more as more and more rubbish is produced. It's just so frustrating. But you've also got to take care of noise concerns. For instance, I probably, not in the best knowledge, ended up putting a bunch of a lot of wind generator things right in the middle of a bunch of cities, or maybe I put down the wind things and then built the cities around them. Some people were complaining about the noise. I learned that whenever I was putting anything that was big or important down, I always had to make sure there was some space around it so that people weren't bothered by the noise. For instance, when I put down the stadium, I made sure that we're like parks or quiet areas before I get to the building. I wanted to avoid, by all situations, a Gareth Brooks style incident. So as you can see, there's a lot of little nice systems and things going into developing the system, into growing it, to making sure all the citizens are happy that they've got their power, their sewage, their water supply, their convenience, and that the city prospers economically enough with people being able to have jobs and be able to get to and from their jobs as well. You can even, you know, e-stalk all your little citizens by like zooming in on one and seeing their work day and seeing where they go to and where they work. And then you can like rename the where they work and everything. So a lot of nice little details to it. I'm going to leave you now with the music for City Skylines. This is the main theme. It is composed by Joanne Voltucken and Jani Laxson. And as I said, it's from City Skylines by Colossal Order. This has been David Collins with BitNote. Hope you enjoyed. Have a good day and all the best.